Hi, everyone, and welcome to this edition of Roar Lions Roar. I'm your host tonight, Matt Filipovits, joined by my phenomenal co-host, Mr. Bill DeFilippo. Bill, it's been almost 2 months, but we are back in action.
Yeah, we're back in action after a Penn State season that, had its ups and downs. I'd certainly say I think a little break was good for all of us. Hopefully it was good for all of our various listeners. I had three children and I wrote the next great American novel in that time. So it's been a very productive 2 months for me. How about yourself?
I have just had no other thoughts in my brain than this TikTok I saw, Bill.
I mentioned it to you earlier.
It's this high schooler and his high school highlight tape in basketball is just like a minute and a half of him taking charges set to the iCarly theme song. It's legitimately one of the most impressive things I've ever seen. And it's maybe my favorite video on the internet now.
You say that now, but when he ends up playing for Purdue next year, you're not going to like him.
That's a really good point. But Bill, we will jump right in. So a lot has happened for Penn State in the past 60 or so odd days. The Penn State quarterback room has added Ethan Grunkemeyer and promoted Danny O'Brien from, is he still the GA? Is he just quarterback's coach or what exactly is going on there?
I think he is just the QB coach right now, but I will check while you talk.
So we're going to, a goal for this is to kind of get back in the swing of things. And with spring ball starting up in about a week, I want to say, we're going to go position by position and just talk about what we thought about this room in 2023, what they need to fix in 2024, and we're kind of going to take it from there. So today the plan was to do quarterbacks, running backs, and receivers, and then I figured receivers may need its whole own episode just for us to talk about exactly what happened. So we'll do quarterbacks and running backs today. And Bill, let's start off by talking about the Penn State quarterback room in 2023. Drew Aller came in, the former five-star quarterback, won the starting job over Bo Prabula, the Pennsylvania native. And overall, our stat line, 2,631 yards, 25 touchdowns, just two picks. That sounds good on paper. But the two picks doesn't really tell the full story because a lot of the time it felt like he was afraid to throw the ball. Bill, year one for Drew Aller. We'll start there. What went wrong? What went right? And just your overall thoughts on his first year as a starter in 2023?
I think to start this, there is a quote that Drew, something very interesting to me because I have, this is more back in my days working for the Alumni Association, working, doing more writing stuff around Penn State. But I've requested to talk to Penn State football players in the past. And it's not always easy to get Penn State football players to sit down and talk for a while. And it's been interesting to me because in the past couple of days, Drew spoke to Ben Jones of StateCollege.com, Thomas Frank Carr of BWI. I don't know if he's done anything beyond that, but he's been talking more. He's been more public more. And I think compared to last year, when everything around him seemed to just be so tightly wound up and tightly controlled, and everything was such tunnel vision around you need to be perfect this year. I just don't know how all that stuff would have gelled. And he gave a quote to Ben Jones that I thought was really interesting. I'm going to go ahead and read that now because I think this quote in the context of what he looked like last year, what happened last year, a lot of the things we saw, good, bad, or otherwise from him last year, is really important. And that quote is, "I think honestly it takes time for kids to develop no matter their age or anything like that. This is my sixth or seventh year playing quarterback full time. Most quarterbacks are bred quarterbacks from the day one that they start putting on the pads. They're going to be a quarterback. That just wasn't me. And I'm glad that wasn't me, honestly, because I felt like that helps me play a lot. I could really understand everything because growing up, I was tight and I was blocking. So at the end of the day, it just takes time and development. Sometimes it takes time and maturity. I haven't really been immersed in the full quarterback life yet for that long. So it just takes some time. And I think I learned a lot from last year, and I'm doing more this offseason so far, which is going to help me hopefully going into spring ball and fall camp. I think I do, and then parenthetical, have to remind myself of the journey some quarterbacks have taken. I think it's just kind of natural to look around and see other people and just look at them, because everybody's journey is different at the end of the day. But, you know, most of the time you don't have a guy that comes in right away like Trevor Lawrence did and just takes over. Like, he didn't start till halfway through the season anyway, so it still took a bit of time for him. But he stepped in year one and took them to the national championship, but everybody's journey is different. And I say that, Matt, to say this. I think that even with Drew sitting and learning for a year, I think even with Drew playing pretty mistake-free football for in terms of turning the ball over last year, we saw a guy who sure as hell looked like he was in his sixth or seventh year of being a quarterback. And I don't know about you, but I think when I read that quote, it helped me put into perspective and kind of crystallize a lot of the thoughts that I had about Drew Aller's first year as Penn State starting quarterback.
So when I was thinking about how I want to describe year one of Drew Aller, a certain date came in mind, and that date was April 14th of 2016. Bill, if you can tell me what happened April 14th, 2016, I will Venmo you $5,000.
Was that the day Sean Clifford came into Penn State?
It was not.
Okay.
This is a very roundabout metaphor.
Was that the day? Was that the day, either Justin Fields committed or Justin Fields decommitted?
No, it has nothing. It could not have anything less to do with Penn
State.
Oh, well,
that would have been a good hint to get at the start of this, but please continue.
That was the day former Philadelphia Philly Vince Velasquez struck out 16 San Diego Padres in a shutout in his first full year in Philadelphia. That's what I would describe in the football sense as Drew Aller against West Virginia. He came out of the gate so hot, and all of us thought, oh my God, this is the answer. This is the kid we have been waiting for. To look that good in primetime against a Power 5 opponent had everybody excited, and it should have. That was a humongous moment in the season. And then from there, we saw it come down to earth as teams figured out how to handle Drew Aller. And now it's on the coaching staff to take all of the good that we have seen in that one specific shining moment and mold it into a legitimate Power 5 starter who could be an NFL player one day. I think Aller, you used the term risk, was it risk averse or what term
risk
did you
risk? Risk averse.
It was risk fearful, I think, is how sure. I would describe the way that the offense was called and the way Aller played last year. There wasn't anything to avoid because there wasn't anything to put the ball in harm's way really ever. And that really held the offense back. So from that perspective, the number one thing that Andy Kotelnicki, Danny O'Brien, and Drew Aller have to work on is making Aller okay with not being perfect. The perfect stat line is 1-0. I don't care if you throw four picks, get the win. And that's going to be the big thing that. Go ahead, Bill. Sorry.
No, continue, because I do want to ask you a question off of that.
Yeah. The most important thing for Drew Aller right now is to learn to make the mistakes, grow from it, not be afraid of them. And then that's going to open up a playbook with Andy Kotelnicki that I think can really take advantage of the best players on this roster, which is probably going to be the tight ends and the running backs.
Okay, so my question basically is that I knew in the lead up to going into last year, it seemed to me like your number one thing for Drew was he just could not turn the, like if he avoided turnovers, he was fine. And it seemed like your big reference point in that was the Penn State Ohio State game from 2022, where Clifford turns the ball over X times, Ohio State goes on to win. Mm-hmm. Do you think that Drew? I don't want to say. Do you think that Drew, maybe in retrospect, too much emphasis was placed, and not just by you. I mean, this was a thing that James Franklin talked about, a thing James Franklin is still talking about. Too much of an emphasis was placed on Drew didn't turn the ball over at the expense of whatever other thing you want to mention here.
Yes, I was wrong. Okay. I was wrong about the way it shook out last year, and I'll own that. And I honestly, I didn't think we would ever see a quarterback exist in the way Aller did last year. Where it was clear he had all that potential, but his fear of making a mistake is what held them back. The physical traits weren't what held him back, and I don't think I've ever seen a quarterback play the game the way it felt like Aller was playing a lot of last year. And now that I know that's the other end of that four turnover spectrum, both of them are equally maddening, and there's no right way to do it. So I think, you know, myself especially, I think Franklin definitely did it too, put too much emphasis on taking care of the football, because turnovers are what killed Penn State against Ohio State at home in 2022. And I understand the perspective of we need to eliminate that. But there is such thing as overcorrection. I had never seen an overcorrection to that extent. And now that I know that that's possible, it's really changed my perspective on how I view Sean Clifford and how I view what Drew Aller has to be moving forward.
Yeah. So the comparison that I made, and I made this a lot in private with us talking about Drew and talking about this aversion to turnovers and all that sort of thing, is Josh Allen of the Buffalo Bills. And the comparison that I made, obviously Drew has been getting compared to Josh Allen ever since he blew up as a recruit, as a big physical, strong arm quarterback, all that. The gripe that people have, the critique that people have about Josh Allen is that he turns the ball over too much. He was tied for the NFL lead for turnovers by a quarterback last year with 17. He was tied with Sam Howell, the Washington Commanders, with that. Whether it was throwing the ball to the other team, whether it was fumbling the ball, whatever it was, that's what that's just the thing that everyone always pointed to with Allen for, oh, he's this, he's overrated, he's this. At the same time, with those 17 turnovers, or no, it was 18 interceptions, and then let me just make a quick, it was a few more than that. I apologize for the bad podcasting. 18 interceptions, 7 fumbles. So 25 turnovers in all.
25. It's a lot.
That's a lot. That sounds like a lot. That is giving the other team slightly more than one possession, one free possession a game. And I think when you look at it from that perspective, it's one extra possession that the other team gets. And in exchange, you get a quarterback in Josh Allen who was able to lead his offense to the third best total offense in the NFL. The Bills were, I believe, sixth in the NFL in scoring offense. He was third in QBR. He was second in EPA. He was all these sorts of things. Maybe the turnovers aren't as big of a deal. Obviously, you want to try to avoid them. But when you have a quarterback who is capable of the incredible, who is capable of towing that line between brilliance and, you know, brilliance and a tire fire, the way that a guy like Josh Allen is, maybe it's worth him occasionally turning the ball over, because then at the same time, he will have a window this big to fit a football this big into, and he's able to do that. And I bring that back to Drew, and I bring that back to what he said to Ben Jones about how this is his sixth or seventh year playing quarterback full time. That's something you have to learn. And for all the conversation about how Penn State had playoff and Big Ten aspirations, one thing I think is now clear in retrospect is that Penn State's quarterback had a lot of learning that he needed to do, and he believes he has had a lot of learning that he needed to do. So putting it into that perspective, yeah, like Drew had a nice year. 2,600 yards, 25 touchdowns for a team that won 10 games, 13th in the Big Ten, or 13th in the country, all these sorts of things. that's a nice year. It's a nice thing to build on. But I think we can now say, in retrospect, based on the season that we saw, based on the comments that Drew has made, that was something he needed to lay a foundation. And if that's the foundation that he laid mm-hmm. and he is now able to build on that, that's really exciting. That's a really, really good floor.
You can build a lot of really beautiful buildings on that foundation.
That is a good floor for a quarterback to have. But of course, again, he has to build on that. And that's where, like, you know, I don't know if consternation would be the word here, but that's where the weird vibe that I think a lot of Penn State fans have about Drew heading into next year comes from.
And to wrap up the 2023 thing, there's just a couple of things I want to make sure, because Drew did lead the team to 10 wins. He threw 25 touchdowns as a 19-year-old in the Big Ten. That's an impressive feat. Mm-hmm. The deep ball, when it was there, it looked pretty. Mm-hmm. He protected the ball on deep balls, which I think is hard to do. There's got to be a happy medium there, but there has been, he never really threw a deep ball into double coverage that didn't seem like the receiver had at least a 40% shot to make a play. That's a good thing. He throws a nice deep ball. He ran the ball better than I thought he was going to.
I've said it on here. I know you've said this as well. It's not that I think Drew is a bad runner. I just don't think he looks like super fluid and it's a little bit clunky.
No,
it's something that he's still learning to work through, but he's certainly not like hopeless running the football or anything.
No, and I thought that he did a pretty good job understanding of, I need to go move the sticks, and I'm 6'5", I could probably fall forward here. I think that's a underrated skill that he had. And I just think he did a very, very good job feeling pressure and not taking a ton of sacks. I think he did a very good job understanding what he was able to get himself out of, and he did a good job of not getting beaten down the way we've seen quarterbacks do in their first year in the Big Ten. I think that is an underrated thing that, if he gets the confidence to air it out now, will be a great thing to have in conjunction with that ability to take hits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, one thing that we know about Andy Kotelnicki, and a big reason why is because his quarterbacks at Kansas were very mobile guys. But one thing we know about Andy Kotelnicki, he likes having that QB run element. It's funny, because if you were building your perfect Andy Kotelnicki quarterback, it probably looks like Bo Prabula. But
that's a great segue, Bill.
Yeah, but it's Drew Auer, and that's something that I think we're going to end up seeing and having to see a lot out of him.
So we got to talk about Bo Prabula, who in a redshirt freshman season played a lot for a backup quarterback. He didn't throw a ton. He threw for 149 yards and 4 touchdowns, but he did a ton of damage on the ground. 56 carries, 329 yards. That's a 5.9 yards per carry clip. That's pretty good. That's really, really good. Granted, he played a lot of that against backups. Still, a lot to like there. He also ran it for 6 touchdowns as well. Bill, we've all seen the clip on Twitter of the 2 quarterback system Kansas had a lot of fun with. It's way too early to talk about that. What did you think of Bo Prabula in that limited role we saw him in 2023? And are you like me in that I wish the role was at least a little bit bigger, because I think he played some very good football for them?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that there were some comments by James Franklin after Mike Yurcich got fired that sure made it sound like, you know, if Franklin had his way, he would have had more of Bo Prabula on the field with Drew Auer. Mm-hmm. Big L for the James Franklin meddles in his offense too much crowd on that one. But yeah, Drew, I thought Bo did a nice job for his role. I mean, I think that we still have no clue what he is as a bat. Like, I think it's very important to stress, we don't know what Bo Prabula is as a thrower of the football. 11 for 21, 52.4%, 149 yards, 7.1 yards per attempt, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, 174.8 passer rating, QBR of 74.2. All good numbers, but like you mentioned, largely against backups, largely in games that were already decided. His touchdowns came, one was against Delaware, one was that one against Northwestern that made people with chronic gambling brain lose their minds, one was against Michigan State.
I forgot about that.
Dude, grow up. Like, Jesus Christ. And then one against Ole Miss where it was on a trick play. So other than that Ole Miss, all of them were very much in situations where games are already decided. It's Penn State's backups against another team's backups, whatever. We still have more we need to learn about Bo in that regard. But we know what he could do with his legs. 56 carries, third most on the team, 329 yards, third most, 56 carries, fourth most on the team, behind Drew, who a lot of that with Drew is QB sneaks. Bo, 56 carries, fourth most on the team, 329 yards, third most on the team, six touchdowns, tied for second most on the team. And I think when you consider his role, and again, consider the fact that James Franklin pretty clearly wanted more Bo Prabula. I think he had a good year. I'm not going to sit here and say he should even sniff Penn State's starting quarterback job. That would be insane. Like, this should be is
Drew. Bill, what about winter workouts?
Let me tell you this, brother. There is nothing I could say about winter workouts that wasn't already said by Christian Hackenberg much, much better over on his podcast. But Bo is a nice backup quarterback. Matt, you've made this point a million times about how important it is having that backup who you could just trust and rely on. You know he's not immediately going to leave to search for a bag somewhere else. All these other things. And I think Penn State has an untold...
He's getting a bag here.
Yeah, and I think Penn State has an untold luxury in a guy that they clearly trust to one extent or another. They clearly want to get on the field a little bit more. And we know he has an attribute in his ability to run the football that makes him dangerous and adds a dimension to Penn State's offense in the event that he ever has to come in for one reason or another.
So moving forward now, looking ahead to 2024, Aller's back, Prabula's back, Jackson Smolak, who appeared in one game last year for, I believe, one handoff, is back, securing a redshirt, and four-star Ethan Grunkemeyer is on campus for spring. Bill, we'll talk about this group broken out by Aller, Prabula, and the two other guys. And we'll start from the bottom and work our way up. What constitutes success in the spring for Jackson Smolak and Ethan Grunkemeyer? For me, learn the playbook, give great scout team looks, and continue to work on the things that they're going to need to compete for a Penn State starting quarterback job, maybe as early as like 2025, 2026.
This is patronizing. I really don't like that this is my take, but make it so if Penn State is up 42-0 against Bowling Green, or Penn State is up 42-0 against Kent State, that you have put yourself in a position for after Bo gets his run with the offense, you get into the game. Both of these guys right now are competing for the third quarterback job. And all I want to, one of them is going to get my, I base this on absolutely nothing other than a gut feeling. If Ethan Grunkemeyer can pick up the offense, which by all accounts, he's a really smart kid, really talented kid, really good worker, wouldn't surprise me.
And he's starting from the same playing field as everybody else because with the new offense.
I wouldn't say starting from the same playing field as everybody else because Drew has 13.
I know what you mean,
just for clarity's sake. Yeah. But make it so you're the third string quarterback, that you're going to be able to get a couple of series in those early season blowout games that end up happening. And make it so, you know, I'm not going to knock on wood because it'd make my dog go crazy, but make it so if Drew has a good enough year that he can go to the NFL after this year, that you're making it an actual honest-to-God conversation between you or Bo as Penn State's quarterback heading into 2025. This year is about sitting. It's about learning. It's about being able to get snaps in very specific situations. It's not about going out there and being a viable option for Penn State to put under center for any extended period of time.
And that's actually another really great segue for Bo. An extended period of time under center. I think it's fair to say that's probably not going to be Bo's role in 2024. So for me, success this spring for Bo is, first of all, let me figure out what you are as a passer. That's just a personal thing. I want to know what that actually looks like. Mm-hmm. But work with Andy Kotelnicki and James Franklin and find out what your role on this offense can best be and find those packages. Like, it would not surprise me at all, Bill, if, like, in non-garbage time, Bo got, like, 6 snaps in a game. Yeah. And that's a ton of snaps for a backup quarterback. Show me what those best 6 options are going to be for you in your chances during those plays. Are you in the same boat? What do you think success is in the spring for Bo Pervula?
Just look like a viable option in the event that you have to come in for one reason or another. Like,
interesting. So you're more towards prep for the starter more than you are, let's see what you can do in your package.
Not even necessarily prep for the start. Like, the idea of a backup quarterback is not, we're going to find fun, little, cute ways to get you on the football field. It is, in the event that anything happens to our starting quarterback, we are putting you in there, and we have all the faith in the world that you are good enough to get the job done. That is what a backup quarterback, like, we as Penn State fans have kind of been conditioned. Look at who the backup quarterbacks have been. When it was Will Levis, he only got on the field in very specific situations when it was like, ooh, look at this, look at this, look at this. Never mind, our backup quarterback's in. We're going to do something funky with him. Or Tommy Stevens. Look at Trace. Never mind, Trace is over here. Tommy Stevens is over here. We're going to do something with Tommy Stevens. Jet sweep. Tommy throws it. Woo! Lion package. That's not what a backup quarterback is. A backup quarterback is, that is your break in case of emergency option. If they could find ways to get Bo on the field in interesting packages and use his ability to run the ball, use his arm, use the various fun things that you could do with him in these two running backs, awesome. I'm very happy about that. But also make it so I know that Penn State has, number one, first and foremost, Penn State has a viable option. God forbid anything happens to Drew and Bo has to come into a football game. Number one on the list for me.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I haven't really thought about that. I mean, you got to be prepped for it. And I think that not a lot in the offense, or at least for Kotelnicki, I think he can really keep it consistent by what he's worked with absolutely insane football players and football minds everywhere he's went. So I feel confident he can get it going, but I'm in more of the camp of, let's see what you can be when we're at our best. Sure. But I like where your head's at.
Yeah, I mean,
Drew Aller.
I think that's just to be clear, like, I think it's totally reasonable to look at Bo and go, this is what your most likely role is. Your most likely role is a couple gadget plays, a couple of this, a couple of that, blah, 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 blah. That's just not what I think the number one job of a backup quarterback should be. I think the number one job of a backup quarterback should be, if you got to go into a football game, we're not going to be losing anything.
Yeah. And that's a really good line of thinking. For me, Drew Aller, the number one thing he has to do to have success this spring is throw the ball to his wide receivers as often and as frequently as humanly possible. I really think that they're going to be able to figure a lot out in terms of getting the playbook installed. It sounds like, at least from Aller's interview yesterday on BWI, that Andy Kotelnicki really does a good job of maximizing his time with the player so they can learn the playbook quickly. And that's really important. So I'm not really pressed about the playbook being an issue. It's getting on the same page as his pass catchers and making sure that he does his part to ensure we do not have a repeat of 2023.
I think that's fair. And I'm going to again mention something that he said to Ben. He felt like he was putting too much pressure on himself. And he mentioned conversations that he had with Marquise Hagans about, listen, I played in the NFL, I played in college, I did all this. This is when you're supposed to have fun. This is when in your career you're supposed to have fun. I think just having fun with it, because I think I almost made it too much of a grind last year. Mentally, where I wasn't taking a step back and just taking everything in. Like, this is what I dreamed about as a kid, playing for a big-time college football program. I'm supposed to have fun. I didn't come here to not have fun at a place like Penn State with the passionate fan base we have here and how talented we are as a team. I want to have fun this year and this offseason. And obviously, Drew's not going to be going out in the blue-white game and slinging the pill all over the yard, looking like the second coming of Peyton Manning or anything. But I want to just see his body language. I want to see how loose he is, how relaxed he is. If he really is, you know, finding some joy through all of this in the
football season.
Yeah. In the aftermath of how tough last season ended up being for him. And, you know, the first way to fix a problem is to address a problem and to understand, admit that you have a problem. It seems like Drew has that understanding. So is he able to come out? Is he, like you mentioned, I think you made a really good point. Is he able to get on the same page as all of his wide receivers? Because, like, by no means does it seem like, there is, like, no talent in that wide receiver room. I think this is a thing that he mentioned on BWI. But is he able to just build up a little bit more of a rapport with the guys who are already here? Is he able to build up more of a rapport with the guys who didn't get on the field a ton last year, with Julian Fleming coming in from Ohio State? All these little things. And can you just kind of stack all these little things on top of one another? So by the time we get to that first game of the season, which is going to be a really difficult first game of the season, you're not going in there wound up tight thinking, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God. You're thinking, all right, let's go out here and kick West Virginia's ass.
Real quick on the West Virginia point, shout out to Neil Brown's agent. Guy got a new contract today. He was on everybody's hot seat list last year, man. What a difference a year makes.
I might have, good
for Neil Brown.
I might have told the story on the pod going into last year, but my brother-in-law from West Virginia, huge WVU fan, family or huge WVU fans. He actually once told me that his grandfather is such like an old school WVU fan that he hates Penn State just as much as he hates Pitt. Like,
that's deep.
Yeah. I think it can be very hard for some of, especially for Penn State fans like you and me, Matt, who are relatively new to the game, to forget just how acrimonious Penn State and WVU was back in the day. But he and everyone he knew desperately wanted Neil Brown out the paint. They were basically just counting down until Neil Brown lost his job last season. And the extent to which he was able to turn things around last year, really impressive. And he now deserves this. And now WVU, you know, it's a thing that we'll probably mention a few times between now and the start of this game. WVU is going to be going into that game charged up with a coach that they apparently believe in to one extent or another. And it's going to be a very good test for Drew, you know, to bring it back around to Penn State's quarterbacks with how bad he was on the road last year. Like, we're not going to sit here and sugarcoat it. Like, his best performance on the road was a game where he threw for 240 yards and completed 25 of 34 passes for 7.1 yards per attempt. He was not good on the road.
Which game was that?
Maryland.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
He was not good on the road last year.
The Dante Cephas unlock game.
If you want to count Michigan State, go ahead and count Michigan State. I wouldn't do that.
No, get out of here.
But
miss me with that.
It's what Drew's big like concern weakness is. But he's now, you know, his mindset seems like it's changing heading into this year, and that's going to be big for the entire season. I think it's going to be really big for that first game of the year.
Bill, it's a big first game of the year, and it's many, 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 many months away. But you can be ready for it by ordering some premium collegiate apparel from our friends over at homefieldapparel.com. That's right, folks. Homefield Apparel is back for another year as the podcast sponsor. They make some of the coolest collegiate apparel in the marketplace today. Penn State, West Virginia, Pitt. All schools we mentioned in this brief little segment and all schools that you can find on homefieldapparel.com. Crewnecks, t-shirts, joggers, hoodies, sweatshirts. They really do take the time to learn about the history of your school, and they make some of the comfiest apparel I think I have in our wardrobe. And for, I believe it's still the same promo code right now until we got clarification on a new one. So it's still promo code RLR23 for 15% off your first order at homefieldapparel.com. Again, that's promo code RLR23 for 15% off your first order. Thank you, as always, to Homefield for sponsoring this podcast. And Bill, Penn State's running backs last year, not nearly as much fun as we thought they would be.
Not nearly as much fun as we thought they would be. But if I remember correctly, in their like end of season awards for to celebrate the best players on the offense, I think Nick Singleton and Catron Allen might have gotten them. I will look this up though.
So Singleton and Allen, basically identical lines. Catron Allen led the way with 172 carries. Singleton, 171. Very close. Catron, 902 yards and 6 tutties. Singleton, 752 yards and 8 tutties. That's 5.2 and 4.4 yards per carry, respectively. The big plays weren't there. Catron Allen's biggest run for Penn State this season was 50 yards. Nick Singleton's biggest run, 24, which is the same as Drew Aller's biggest run. I don't think anybody had that on their bingo card last year. That was just a very, very weird development. In the receiving game, Singleton caught 26 balls for 308 yards and 2 scores, while Catron Allen caught 14 balls for 81 yards. Trey Potts in there too, but he has since moved on. Best of luck to him at Pro Day. Bill, who do you want to talk about first, Catron Allen or Nick Singleton?
Well, let's talk about Singleton, because I think Singleton is
cool.
I think Singleton is, if I told you going into the season Singleton was going to have 171 carries for 752 yards and 8 touchdowns on 4.4 yards per carry, and his longest run of the year was going to be 24 yards, nobody would believe you.
You'd be crazy. Yeah. You'd be crazy to think that was possible.
Yeah, and I did end up going to look, and despite all of that, most valuable offensive player at the annual awards banquet at the end of the year were Catron Allen and Nick Singleton. So here's my general theory.
There's a disconnect here then between what we think and then what the internal.
I don't totally agree with that, and here's why. Okay. I think that Singleton wasn't as good running the football. I think that obviously he didn't have quite as much wiggle. He wasn't as good as kind of breaking away and running into space, running away from defenders. I completely agree with that. I thought he was much better as a pass blocker. I thought he was much better as a receiver last year. You looked at his numbers and obviously a big part of that was because Drew was captain checkdown last year. But you look, and Singleton as a freshman, 11 receptions, 85 yards, 7.7 yards per catch, one touchdown long of 22 yards. Last year, 26 receptions, 308 yards, 11.8 yards per catch, two touchdowns, 53. He was Penn State's fourth leading receiver in terms of receptions, fourth leading receiver in terms of receiving yards, and fourth leading receiver in terms of longest reception for a score. So
he looked a lot more natural catching the ball too. It really looked like he fought the ball in 2022 last year. Look, it's clear he's still not comfortable doing that, or at least as comfortable as Catron Allen is, even though he had more numbers in that regard. But I think he did make a lot of strides just in terms of comfort getting the ball that way.
Yeah, and that's where I think it's difficult to talk about, because that's the other thing. In addition to giving him that award, James Franklin praised him for becoming a more well-rounded running back all season. And if you want to sit here and say he was blowing smoke up the kid's ass, fine. Like, that's your prerogative. You're allowed to do that. I'm not going to police you. But my theory on Nick Singleton's season was that he worked his ass off to get better at the stuff that he wasn't as good at. And we saw that. At the same time, he wasn't as good at the thing we knew he could do really, really well. And it seemed to me to start the year like he was really struggling with that. You know, he had an all right game against WVU, 13 carries, 70 yards, one touchdown. And then he hit a bit of a slump. And it just seemed to me, Matt, like he was constantly fighting it. He was really struggling. It was almost like he's a super competitive kid who did everything that was asked of him. And as a result,
he
couldn't do the thing that he is really good at, or he struggled to do the thing that he was really good at. And that just seemed like it weighed on him until those last couple of games of the year, particularly the Michigan State game where he was great. So he's a tough one to talk about, but I generally think that hindsight is better. Hindsight looks a little bit better on his year than it did at the time. And it set him up for a really good 2024 season.
He was so coachable, he hurt his own stat line, I think is the best way to describe what happened in Nick Singleton. And that's a really interesting place to exist in. And I think it's really going to be beneficial for him in the long term. I think we can both confidently say Nick Singleton and Catron Allen will not be in State College this time next year. I think it's fair to say they will be in Indianapolis for the NFL Combine this time next year, barring any injury or Penn State suddenly getting a billionaire in NIL bag money. So what Singleton did last year, I think, was really become a more complete running back. And I think to go from the guy who is so clearly the best athlete on the field, be that probably as a true freshman, to understand that, for the longevity of my career, I need to learn how to do these things that I'm not the best at right now. Develop those, and let's hope to bring it all together in 2024 and emerge as a more complete back at the end of your college career. That's really all anybody's looking for. And with Singleton, I think he made strides there. He's not going to forget how to run away from somebody and go for 75 yards. He didn't have to learn that. But he did have to learn, how do I pass block? How do I not fight this pass coming my way? How do I understand my role in the offense better? And that's what I'm excited to see. Yeah. I really do not think the best football for Nick Singleton is behind him at Penn State. I still think we are going to see a lot of really explosive plays from him. And I think Kotelnicki is the guy to make that happen.
Yeah, and here's a very important thing that I think we need to mention. In this conversation about Penn State's offense, and in every conversation we have about Penn State's offense over the next couple of weeks, the vibes were god-awful. Like, they were terrible. The offensive coordinator got fired mid-season. Like,
the first coach to ever get fired at Penn State for Franklin mid-season.
Yeah, and I think it's probably, you know, I'm sure T. Frank over at BWI could do a film breakdown, and I believe he did over the course of the season, and I have simply memory holed a lot of this Penn State football season, that basically showed why Penn State's offense wasn't, or why Nick Singleton wasn't as good as he was the year before. There were a ton of tackles where if he just makes that last guy miss, instead of a 5, 6, 7 yard gain, it's 15, 20, 25 yards, or maybe even more than that. He had a ton of those. But I think, again, it's worth mentioning the passing game never looked great. The rushing game never looked great. They especially didn't look great until the new coordinators, or until the interim coordinators came in, you know, with a bit, a bit of an asterisk on the Ole Miss game, because that was an opt-out extravaganza. But you put all of that together, and maybe it makes a little bit more sense why Nick Singleton didn't have as great of a year as we were hoping he was going to have coming in.
Catron Allen, on the other hand, I think had a really strong year. 5.2 yards per carry is not all that impressive in and of itself. But when you think about the way Penn State runs Catron Allen, that is a feat. That is a guy who is physical. They run between the tackles without a lot of daylight. And I think Catron Allen did a really good job of just continuing to show why he is, I think, one of the most underrated players in college football.
Yeah, you can basically set your watch to him. I mean, 172 carries.
Yeah, that's the best way to describe it.
172 carries, 902 yards, 5.2 yards per carry, 50 yards is long, 6 touchdowns on the year. You give the ball to Catron Allen, and you have some confidence that he is going to get...
Fall forward for 2 yards at least.
Well, no, fall forward for 4 or 5 yards at least. Yeah. You can have that confidence in him, and he's just a really solid... Really, sorry, Shaq is doing something weird on television. So a little bit of background noise, a little bit of a background information for all of our listeners. This isn't our job, and I have my job on in the background. So if you ever see me looking up on the YouTube, it's probably because Shaq or Charles Barkley are like, I don't know, trying to eat an entire sleeve of Oreos in one bite. But Catron Allen is just a guy that Penn State can rely on. Catron Allen is a...
And of course, your job is the guy who brings Shaq or Charles Barkley more Oreos.
God, I would love to know how much money that person makes. Catron Allen's a guy who... And I think we saw it for stretches last year when Penn State's offense really got into the mud. It seemed like he was the guy, you know, we're just going to give Catron the ball. We're going to let him do his thing. You know, with how they rotated their running backs, eventually Singleton would get onto the field. But let's just give Catron a possession or two, or two, three series out here and just kind of let him cook a little bit. Good things usually tend to happen when that's the case. Again, like Singleton, it culminated with his performance against Michigan State. Singleton against Michigan State, 18 carries, 118 yards, 6.6 yards per attempt and a touchdown. Allen, 15 carries, 137 yards, 9.1 yards per attempt. I think that when Penn State just needs its running game to start going with some level of consistency, they know they can trust Catron Allen. And when you consider how Penn State's passing game just wasn't that big of a threat last year, of course there's not going to be a lot of space for a guy like Singleton to burst through a hole and take off, but there is going to be a lane somewhere for a guy running back to stick their foot in the dirt, cut back, hit a hole, and just get a nice gain to keep them on schedule, and that's what Catron Allen's really good at.
And that's what he's going to continue to be good at. Mm-hmm. So, Bill, let's look ahead now into the spring. In this room, Jaywan Sider is back. I believe it's year 7 for Jaywan Sider. 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. Is that correct? That feels crazy that they've kept him around for this long. And what a job he has done with this room. Singleton's back. Allen's back. Safe to say they're going to get the veteran spring treatment. So we won't really talk about them all that much, but let's start with talking about the new addition to this room for spring. Quinton Martin, 4-star prospect out of Western Pennsylvania, a guy who everybody really, all the major players in this sport would have been happy to land a guy like Quinton Martin. He's a guy who can catch the ball really well. He's a guy who can hit the hole hard. He's physically a very, very developed kid for a guy his age. Bill, what does success look like to you for Quinton Martin in this spring cycle?
Just that he's able to establish a role within this offense. I know there were conversations about, or there was a lot of chatter among Penn State fans of, could the move for him be moving him to wide receiver, taking advantage of the fact that he was comfortable catching the football during his time at Bell Vernon High School in Bell Vernon, Pennsylvania. And if he's just able to bring that little bit of a different dimension, the guy who's a little bit more explosive, a little more, bit more dynamic, I think that is such a good balance to, you have Singleton, the guy who he's big and he's physical and he's nasty. He's obviously fast. He could do really special things with the football, but he's going to lower his shoulder and he's going to run you over. And a guy like Catron Allen, who again, really consistent, maybe not the most explosive guy, but a guy that you trust to do good things. Can you then have a guy like Quinton Martin who you just put the football in his hands in some space and you watch what happens and something good's going to happen? If he can establish himself from the rip as a guy who could do that, that is huge for him, huge for Penn State's offense. I mean, looking at the roster, he's already 6'1 and 194 pounds. He is the tallest guy in Penn State's running back room. He's a little bit on the lighter side, but in just the pictures I've seen, he seems like a guy who does carry that pretty well. So can you maybe bulk up a little bit, keep that speed, athleticism, all those sorts of things, and be a really dangerous weapon for Penn State's running back room?
I'm gonna pretty much piggyback off what you just said, but I'm gonna have a little twist on it. Success for me for Quentin Martin in the spring is finding non-traditional ways to get him the football. I think it's very hard to justify taking both of Nick Singleton and Katron Allen out of a running play. I think that's really, really hard to justify. So if Quentin Martin is going to get these kind of carries, I think they're going to have to be quick swing patterns. I think they're going to have to be triple option kind of plays, not these halfback dives or these counters or these, you know, those kind of plays. I think should be reserved for the guys who have proven they can hit home runs and be, well, not really last year, but broadly speaking, can get the job done on those kind of plays. So Quentin Martin needs to find a way outside of what we're used to with a lot of running backs to get the ball in his hands and prove that he can make guys miss and make things happen this spring for him to have a role. And Bill, another reason why I don't feel like Quentin Martin really needs to be the kind of guy to really, you know, give him the handoff and our center is that there's two guys who redshirted last year who I think the staff is very high on. London Montgomery is coming off a pretty severe knee injury that he suffered 2 years ago. I think he can continue just to get healthy, rehab, get up to speed, and we'll see what happens there. But Cam Wallace, a three-star prospect from Georgia who is getting a lot of buzz out of camp, I think is going to play a pretty similar role to what Trey Potts had. And this spring, he has to cement himself as that number three back for it to be a success. Where do you fall here?
Yeah, Montgomery, I agree. He's not a guy I expect too terribly much. Anything they get out of him is great, but coming back from tearing up his knee, not going to be particularly easy. When it comes to Cam Wallace, again, he's just a guy who has track speed. He has speed that Penn State's offense, not just Penn State's running back room, Penn State's offense could really use. And we know Andy Kotelnicki really places a premium on speed. So can he just get on the field in some way? And it's kind of the same thing as Martin. Can he get on the field in some way that lets them take advantage of his speed and lets him use his speed as, again, that a bit of a counterbalance, the lightning to the thunder that are Penn State's top two running backs? Because that is, you know, the other thing here. There's not much of a reason for Penn State to ever take Katron Allen or Nick Singleton off of the football field unless they're looking for some sort of change of pace. Can Cam Wallace provide any sort of a change of pace out of the backfield for the Nittany Lions?
And I think that's going to be interesting to watch how that develops. Again, Cam Wallace is a guy who there were rumors he was pushing Trey Potts for that number three job last year as a true freshman. Now with a full year in this program and in that weight training, how does he carry that weight? How does he go out there and play with this rebuilt body that Chuck Losey helped him get? That's what I'm going to be curious about. And Bill, we'll wrap it up here. Singleton and Allen. I don't think there's anything they can show me this spring that's going to, you know, prove to me that they're fixed. So my number one thing is stay healthy and drink lots of water on the sideline at the Blue White game.
Don't mess your knee up. Like, don't get hurt. Like, just stay healthy. Mm-hmm. Like, there is literally nothing.
Veteran spring.
Literally nothing that I want. And there's obviously... there's obviously value to this in that for those other guys, right? Like it provides opportunities that they could really use. And I don't want to see much of Nick Singleton or Katron Allen in the blue white game. If they're out there taking half-assed reps,
if any,
like fine, like I'll be fine with that, but I don't want them like putting their foot in the ground when Abdul Carter is bearing down on them or anything like that. I think that's an unnecessary risk for them to take. So, yeah, stay healthy, keep going down whatever path you guys have been going down, and just make sure you get to summer camp, you know, feeling okay.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat with you there, Bill. So Bill, that's all I had for today. I think it's a really good way for us to put a final stamp off what was a stressful and a not exactly fun a lot of the time 2023 campaign and look ahead to 2024. Bill, anything else you want to talk about before we send the folks off into the rest of their week?
No, nothing. I think that, I think that the next couple of months leading up to the start of the season, particularly, you know, to bring it back to Drew, particularly when it comes to him, are going to be not particularly fun. They're going to be pretty full of anxiety, I would say. But ultimately, it's worth remembering that so much of Drew is the promise of Drew. And if Drew hits, this season is going to be special. And try to remember that while we're having our little meltdowns that are going to invariably pop up between now and the start of September.
How much yelling is going to happen in our next episode, which is going to be recapping the wide receivers?
I don't know, man.
We'll come back next week to see how we handle
whatever,
that.
Dude.
Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for coming back, Bill. It's been good. I hope you enjoyed your nice little time off. We will try to be back in your feed once a week between now and whenever we decide to really ramp up preview coverage. It's going to be a long off season. We're hoping to have a lot of fun, and we hope that you join us for this ride. Be sure to follow us out there on all the social media channels, mostly Twitter. We're at RLRBlog. We are also on Blue Sky, although I forgot the login, so I will reset the password after this and maybe post there a little bit. Who's to say? Be sure to follow us over there on YouTube. This video or this podcast will not be going up on YouTube, but we plan on getting back up and running there soon. Be sure to use the promo code RLR23 for 15% off your first order at Homefield Apparel. And for my co-host, Bill DeFilippo, I'm Matt Flipovitz. Take care, everyone, and go State.